everybody. It's Monday night, generational change. I'm Jen. Peter's not here right now. And I just wanted to start with this. I've been having a lot of fun with Canva lately, and I just decided that this President's Day really had me thinking of like this could be a good story time. But then I'm like, it is its own story time somehow. So I present the story of de-evolution, a history of President's Day in the United States. And for people that are listening to this and don't see it, it's really, you're missing it. This is definitely a visual, but anyway. Hello, all. I'm also waiting for our first guest. We're going to be talking to a friend, Jason Call, who is running for Congress out in Washington. And he's kind of like the West Coast me. And he and I have always gotten along really well. He's a really great guy. And so we're going to be talking with him, which will lead perfectly into our discussion tonight with Andre Stackhouse of Whole Washington. And oh man, do I have my beret? Do we have my beret? I'll be sad if I don't. I think I might, guys, my beret. Aha, aha. Ah, I am so prepared. I'm prepared, red beret people. I always feel like I can't get it exactly right. My head is crooked. Then it looks like a chef's hat. Yeah. So I don't honestly don't know if Peter's joining us, which will be very, very interesting. Okay. So we are sort of just waiting at this point for some guests, and that would be really nice. Everybody's running a little late. Peter's having technical difficulties. I can't get my hat right. We're a mess here. And I know that one of the things that Peter's going to want to talk about is this recent information that's come to light about what's going on inside Movement for a People's Party. And, you know, at this point, like to me, it's sort of just hearsay and speculation. And I don't know what evidence there is. And I don't even know what they're accusing. I really don't. So we are going to have a friend on soon as we can get her on, that is inside on this and can give really kind of more firsthand information about what was going on over at the People's Party. So I really am not that into speculating on that. We did have an episode, if you guys go back, we did have Nick Brana and Zanya Day on our show, and we did talk about what they were doing and what their plan was and what their strategy was. And I don't remember when that episode was, guys, but you would have to go back and look. So we did do a whole episode with them on the People's Party. I've heard things just from rumor mills. It's not worth speculating. But what I would tell people is, like anything else, you need to follow the money. So, you know, that's basically going to be the answer. Where is their money coming from? And where did their money go? And I don't know the answer to this. Like, I don't know. So I figure at some point, Nick will probably make some sort of statement or put out something that is, you know, going to address some of these issues that they're having. And then the other thing that we're going to be talking about, really, again, we're going to get much more into what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. And everybody who knows, I'm not a journalist. I'm not out there investigating. And so we will have somebody on to talk about this. On Wednesday, we're having Colonel Rob Manis. This very well will be our most conservative guest that we've had to date. Makes me a little bit nervous because we've had people that come on with malintent, but I'm going to say going at this benefit of the doubt with all the love in my heart. But this is somebody who we will be able to really get in detail about what's going on military wise in a way that I just cannot do without assistance. So Peter, if you're listening, it'd be nice if you could get on here. He's apparently having slow internet. But yeah. So, yeah, he's having He's having technical difficulties. So while we wait, I do have something that I thought was kind of interesting as well, guys. This is, we actually have an episode of, I love segments because it allows me to kind of really, I'm very like organized in how I think of things. So like, I like to package things, and also it allows me to do really fun graphics. So let me share with you guys. Hold on. Okay, if anybody has ever wondered what 1 million mosquitoes looks like, it's that. So guys, in Lee County, I believe is where this is. Yes, Lee County, Florida, which it includes Sanibel Island, one of my all-time favorite places. This actually is from Sanibel. They don't talk about how they trap the mosquitoes or what their methodology is. They just are basically saying, we trapped 1 million mosquitoes, which is good. Because, you know, they're problematic. But then I start getting, you know, thoughts about the GMO mosquitoes. And, you know, I wonder what kind of experimentation is going on. But this was a project that took place in one section of one neighborhood on Sanibel Island over the summer of 21. So this occurred over the summer just in one neighborhood that they trapped this amount of mosquitoes. And yeah. I just thought this made for a really, I mean, I just, I didn't know that people would really know. And then the bigger question I have is, who counted them? Who counted the mosquitoes? Hey, nice of you to join us.
It took forever and a day to get this internet connection going, unfortunately.
Do you see the mosquitoes? Do you see this?
I can't believe that that's a pile of mosquitoes. It looks like
it's a pile of mosquitoes, but how do they know it's a million? I mean, who counted it? That's what I don't understand. Did you see the opening slide? Did you? Did you see what I did? Did you see this? Did you see that? You see the graphics at the top? I'm so amused with myself. I think you're frozen, but you know what? We're going to probably have issues with this all single night. And I tell you that when you're going to go out of town, if we want to do this professionally, you need to have a more like serious setup, because it's not no bueno, man. You're frozen. We don't need to stare at him. So yeah, this is Peter, I believe, at his mom's house in New Jersey. I don't know what the technical difficulties are. Apparently very slow internet. Maybe Jersey doesn't have good internet. I don't know. Seems like Jersey would have good internet. Like it seems like, you know, a very kind of urban, you know, people involved in media. There's a lot of like, you know, drug companies there, pharma. And I would think they'd have good internet. I don't know. They waited them. What are you guys all chatting about over there? So this is not like the ideal situation. I'm not really great at just sort of sitting here and chatting. This is why it's a show with both of us, because otherwise the only shows I would really do would be interviews, because I really like to, it's weird for me to just sit and talk to, you know, you guys, because it's just weird. So I'm going to think about something that's going on here that we're trying to work on again. And I'm going to bring it up again. I don't know if it's different people overlapping, but we need somebody in Indian River County who would like to run for state Senate. So if you guys know anybody in Indian River County, I believe Vero Beach is in Indian River County, but I would figure if you're in Indian River County, you know where you are. So we need somebody in Indian River County that will run for the new state Senate seat there against Aaron Grawl. And this is going to be like a little pet project of mine. Like, I feel like this is like a side job at this point, because, yeah, she can't just have that seat, guys.
So I think we need to, before Jason gets here, I think we need to take a minute to address what's going on in the Ukraine. Obviously, this is a serious situation now. It's escalated into an invasion. I don't know. Nobody obviously knows what Putin's endgame is. Of course, I still maintain that it's primarily not just for land capture, but for, you know, basically running up the cost on petroleum for his own personal gain. I'm going to use that as leverage as a means to getting to pulling his troops out. I could be wrong, but I always think this comes down to money and power. What about you?
Well, yeah. And my problem with all of this is, and Kyle actually did a really good piece on this where he showed the two different sides from a media perspective. Yeah. So he showed, this is what the West is saying. And he even gave it a not too far left. Like he didn't go with an American thing. He went with like a German station, but it was still the West propaganda. And then he showed what RT is saying. And the problem I have is right now, I don't know what I believe. So I don't know what I know to be true. And until I speak to somebody who's there, who has been there, like, I just don't know what to believe. And that's why it's hard to have an opinion on this for me.
Yeah, no, obviously it's still very early. And guys, please hit the like button. If you can put that, Jen, across the screen.
Hold on a second. Can you just hold on a second? All right. I specifically said to you, please do this as a co-host. And I even sent you the information how to do it and you didn't do it. So don't be doing that. Don't be backseat driving with my graphics tonight. All right. You don't use that luxury. Don't. All right. Here, I want you to, okay. Public Health Gal, am I attending the Florida Medicare for All town event organized by, do you know about this? I looked and I don't see it on my calendar, but actually we are going to something that evening. So I don't know. I'm going to look this up. Yeah.
It's news to me. I'm not familiar with it, but that doesn't mean anything.
So yeah, check it out. Like, would you, yeah, make a note, look that up, because we actually have something on our calendar for Thursday. I have Medill. There's a Medill alumni event in Miami, and for us, from a strategic perspective, it's just a smart move. So I don't need to get into details on that, but yeah, we have something on Thursday. But if it's a Zoom thing, which it looks like it would be, that could work.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking Washington tonight because we love to talk about other states because really we're just so sad here and we'll be the last place to get health care. We're Florida. So we will be the last place to get health care. So we have to basically live vicariously through other states. That's what it feels like to me. This is why we do this. Plus, since we really have no chance of that here, is we're still fighting against wire hangers. We have no chance of that here. So if we put our efforts behind one of the states that has a chance, that helps, even though it's not our state. So that's sort of what our thoughts are here. Correct? Yeah, is that what we would say? Is that?
Yeah, that is what we would say.
Okay. So let's bring in Jason. Yeah, let's bring in Jason. He got his hair did different.
I got my hair cut today, this morning even.
So, look, at our age, it's great that you have hair. You know what I mean? Like, that should be celebrated. You got good hair.
I do have good hair. I wish I had long hair again, but I can't run a campaign with long hair. So the short hair is really not me, but it's candidate me.
And I only know you this way, but what's funny is I have seen pictures of you that have been circulated or whatever from when you had long hair, and now I can totally see it. And I really feel like I just felt, you know, much more, I felt more connected when I saw the hippie you. Because I can now, when I see you like this, I know that you're there. Like, I know you're in there. Yeah,
it's cool. I'm still the hippie me. I don't go showing off all my tattoos either, so.
Yeah, you got to hide those. But some are pretty good at doing that.
Got to be a candidate. I just got back from a ferry ride from work on one of our beautiful Puget Sound islands, and I told you I was going to be a few minutes late, but if you don't mind, I'm going to drink a beer while we talk. Are you okay with that?
Then I'll smoke a bowl while we talk. Don't threaten me with a good time.
Yeah, seriously. Well, with the world, right. The world maybe. I mean, listen, it's only going to take one nuke to drop. So, you know, if the world does end in the next several hours because of Putin, then, you know, I guess that, you know, in our trigger happy military, who would just love for it to happen. Might as well smoke up and drink up if that'll work for you. I'm just going to.
Well, I got plenty of both. So.
Do you guys have legalized hallucinogens yet, or is that just Oregon?
Not yet, no. And I don't even know if we've got a bill in our state legislature to be working on it. Although I do know some very, very progressive people in our state legislature who would probably pick that up if I put it in front of them. But, I've been busy with my own thing.
Yeah. So what's going on here?
I don't do that anymore. I just smoke weed.
And this is why I say you kind of like, I feel like you're the West Coast sort of me, like in terms of the issues you're involved in and what you're doing and the person you're running against and just a lot of that same crap that you have. So what progress have you made in terms of breaking through some of that?
Okay. Breaking through some of what is specifically.
I mean, like dealing with your incumbent and since your last campaign and where have you made progress, like in terms of inroads where you know that now there's even more people?
Well, listen, I mean, you know, the road to my election is going to go through local Democratic parties. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, getting endorsements from the 14 of the county and legislative district local parties is going to be important to my campaign. And so I've been making the rounds. I did in 2020, but I only got endorsed by half of them, which means the state party would not allow me access to their voter database. But this time I think we're making better inroads. You know, the reality is any of these local parties that I go to, I align with their platform. I mean, they're, and I've got support of, you know, I've got some open support and then some less than open support because they don't want to, you know, have the appearance of thumbing the scales for me at all. But, you know, I've got a fair amount of support. I've got endorsement committee chairs who are like, you know, we're going to ensure that you're treated fairly. And that's, you know, that's all I can ask for is that I am given a fair opportunity to get in front of people and state my case. And state the case against Larson. And as you know, what I do a lot of is a big part of my campaign is Oppo research. And I think a lot of people shy away from, you know, they're like, we don't want to hear what's bad about him. We want to hear what's going to be good about you. And I'm like, to hell with that. You have got to hear what's bad about him because that's, you know, if I thought he was good, I wouldn't be running against him. So let me tell you why he is failing. And one of the big things that I wanted to talk about that we just press released on today, I tweeted on it and it went out on my campaign email, is the Boeing Boeing 737 MAX crashes that happened in 2018, 2019 with Lion Air out of Indonesia and Ethiopian Air killed almost 350 passengers and crew. Really, what that came down to was a failure of congressional oversight. There's a brand new documentary out on Netflix. It's called Downfall, the Case Against Boeing. And they really detail how bad the corporate culture was at Boeing, a company that had gone from being the most respected airline manufacturer in the world. I remember flying Boeing 747s in the early 80s, or late 70s and early 80s, transatlantic. And it was just such a big thing, Pan Am Clipper and all of that. Boeing was very respected, but they merged with McDonnell Douglas in 1996, and the corporate culture just went in the tank, and they got a lot of competition from Airbus, and their response to it was cutting a lot of corners, trying to push through designs that were substandard. And the Netflix documentary that I just watched two days ago really detailed how bad corporate culture is and what happened with Boeing just goes it's across the board with corporate culture in America these days. But what I was waiting for with this documentary was for them to identify that there was a failure of governmental oversight, and they didn't do it. I was waiting for an hour and a half for a failure of government oversight, because what I know is Rick Larson, the guy I'm challenging here in Washington State, was chair of aviation, and he takes a ton of money specifically from Boeing. Right. And that money is for him to look the other way when Boeing comes and says, we want to deregulate our industry. And that's exactly what happened. The aircraft aviation manufacturing industry had lobbied Congress over and over and over again they call it streamlining. Well, streamlining is deregulation, deregulating oversight of their own parts manufacturer, and this led directly to the crashes that happened in 2018 and 2019. And I'm going to hang that thing around his neck. He was the ranking minority member of the House Aviation Department from 2013. And then he became chair of the Aviation Department when the Democrats took the House in 2019. And he takes a ton of money from the industry. And he is the poster child for why there should not be corporate contributions. And particularly why, if you're sitting on a committee that is a regulatory committee for a particular industry, that you should not be anywhere near money from that industry. He is literally the poster child for how bad things can be when that corruption happens. So that's a big thing. I press released on it today. Check my Twitter, read my press release. But I'm going to hit him hard with this thing. I think people need to know this is where government fails.
Yeah, I agree. But here's what's interesting. So I've recently been given the opportunity to chair a PAC for a statewide race, but it's for a progressive candidate. And the reality is you can't win a statewide race without big money. You can't do it. Maybe in Vermont, you can do that. You can't do that in Florida. It's not going to happen. You can't do it. So there has to be a PAC. And so my thought on this is sort of like, yeah, we need to get the money out, but I kind of feel like in the meantime, we need to sort of fight back we need to use the system to our advantage as best as we can. And I feel like I'd rather have someone like me chairing a PAC, knowing where money's coming from and knowing what our mission is, and that maybe that's not the worst way for us to maybe do things. What are your thoughts?
There's a difference between a PAC and a corporate PAC. Like corporate lobbying money is not the same as a progressive PAC. It's not the same as if I was going to take money from brand new Congress or, if we can know where that money is coming from, and we see that it's
We lost him. That wasn't my fault.
You guys, I feel like they're dropping like flies on me tonight, people. It's sad. It's not out here alone.
Yeah, we'll just, let's just blame Russia.
I'm just going to go with my crappy computer cam instead of this little webcam thing here has been failing on me the last few days. I'm going to have to get another one. Can you hear me okay?
That was a pretty quick recovery, I've got to say. Okay. Yeah.
But audio is good?
Audio is good. So you're cool with the idea. Like, because I was even thinking from this thing that I'm working on that I think that generational change should have a PAC. And I think that's something that we should do and raise large sums of money from places that are on our side.
Here's the thing about.
Now we lost audio. Now we can't hear. Something happened. Peter, you can't hear him, right?
Okay.
It's not me.
Now we can hear you.
Okay. All right. I still had the camera plugged in and I had a microphone attached to it. So now the whole damn thing is unplugged. Technology, right? So here's the thing about PACs. As long as all of the books are open and you see exactly who is giving money to it, and you can say, let's say the CEO of a company gave $10,000 to a PAC, because I think our PACs are essentially you can give as much as you want.
Oh, in Florida, it's the Wild West. Okay. There's no limits.
So I think if the books are open and people can go through the books like if some shitty person is dropping money on a PAC, then you can say, look, I don't want this person's money, right? I don't want this person's money. I think a PAC can reject money from certain individuals, but if you're about raising money for a progressive candidate and a PAC is a way to organize that money, then it's okay. I just, as long as the books are open, as long as it's not dark money, I think there's definitely some issues with quote unquote super PACs, right? Yep. Because that's dark money. So it's not a super PAC. But it's a PAC where everybody can look at the books
then I think it's okay. I would still prefer that people just go donate to candidates directly. I mean,
it would be nice, but when you have a state the size of ours, it's not going to happen. And the person on the other side that we need to sort of unite against is sitting on a $14 million war chest. So you're not doing that with small dollar donations in Florida. It's not happening. So we have to be somewhat realistic, you know, but if like the Seminoles, let's say hypothetically, wanted to donate a huge chunk of money because they don't like what Big Sugar is doing, we'd be happy to take it. You know,
I get that.
Yeah. Peter, any comments on my pack idea since you're involved in it?
People are going to donate one way or the other. They're either going to donate the limit or they're going to donate through bundling. But again, it really comes down to the cause. If they know that you're not taking corporate special interest money, then that's really what it's about. If you're not taking money from Big Sugar and people understand that that's a problem in the state of Florida, just like people in the state of Washington know that there's a huge problem with taking money from Microsoft, from Boeing, from Amazon, who the titans of industry are and you know who are the ones that are causing the problem. There are people, however, with deep pockets that understand that the system is in big trouble and that there needs to be elected representation of, by, and for the people. And that is a very tough nut to crack right now. And the people that are there, you know, even when the alarms are being sounded, they don't care because they're convinced, just like in the movie Don't Look Up, that they're going to get on that rocket ship and get off the planet if everything goes to hell. But the truth is, there is no way off, and we've only got this one, and you better figure it out. And, you know.
Oh my God, the mental, Jason, you saw it, right? You saw Don't Look Up?
I've seen it 3 times, yes.
Okay. The mental image of her getting eaten by whatever that is at the end when they are on that new planet, like they were able to escape in their like rich people pod. And then she walked up to it and just got in. That to me was just, I will never get that out of my head. It was so funny.
I am team Bronzerock for sure.
That was a great movie. We actually had, we've had David Sirota on, and then we also had Michael E. Mann on. So we have definitely well covered that. So, Jason, tell people where they can help you out, how they can donate. You guys, this is what somebody that is coming from the ground up looks like running. Like this is somebody who really represents regular people. It's Call for Congress, right?
It's Call for Congress, CALLFOR Congress, callforcongress.com. That's my website. You can sign up for my mailing list there. You can donate there. I have said that I won't take PAC money myself. I don't feel like I'm going to need PAC money in my race. I know Larson, the guy I'm running against, he raises a ton of corporate money, but I really feel in my district that I can do this without PAC money. But I'm not Florida, right? I'm Northwest Washington, and I've got a decent base of progressive support. But like you said, for people who don't know me, I've been an activist for 30 years. I'm 50 years old, and I've been an activist since I was 19 years old. Activism with anti-war and peace. So, of course, the thing with, we're looking at getting back into a war with a nuclear power right now is driving me absolutely crazy. Healthcare. I you said you possibly Andre was going to be here later. We're going to talk about.
He's here. He's in the green room. He's backstage.
Sure. Okay. So I'll wrap this up quickly. I'm a healthcare advocate, single payer healthcare. We want to get Medicare for all, but we're going to be working on a state initiative here in Washington. Certainly environmental issues and labor issues, right? And I know, Jen, this is a big thing for you. Like if the progressives are really going to make strides in taking back our government for the people, it's going to have to involve the labor movement. And that's why I have been down picketing in Seattle with the cement workers from Teamsters 174 who have been striking for over 70 days now because the construction bosses won't give them a fair contract. And so I'm down there on the picket lines with them. I've been down there a couple of times. I've been down there with the Northwest Carpenters Union when they were striking a few months ago. And I think the thing that is maybe enthusing me more than anything else in the country right now is the massive strike movement that we have going on all across the country. I am there for it. When I get elected, I'm going to do everything I can to help the pro-union and pro-labor movement. So callforcongress.com, call for Congress on all the social medias, and help me out.
Yeah, guys, seriously, thanks, throw Jason some love. Thanks, yeah. Jason.
Yep.
Peace out, brother.
So, yeah, guys, send Jason some love. And what I always say is, even if you have nothing to give, but what you can do is subscribe to all their social media and share it. And that's really helpful. It helps their numbers, viewers, all of that. So even if you have nothing to give, definitely check out and follow on social media. So Andre's here, and we're going to be talking about Whole Washington. Yes? Oh, wait.
That's appropriate.
I know. Okay, I think I got it. Because like once I put it on, if it's good, it's good. And if it's not, then I spend the whole night futzing with it. I think it's good. Okay, this is from, it's from Fran.
Yes.
It's from Fran and the Red Beret ladies, remember?
He's the new political director or campaign director of Whole Washington, the independent nonprofit group that is looking to bring universal health care to the Evergreen State. They've been doing a fantastic job, and now we're looking to do a ballot initiative, which we've been advocating for, is probably the most likely way that it's going to happen. We saw the failure of what just happened with CalCare and their neighbors to the south off I-5. Unfortunately, we still have a massively corrupt legislature at almost every level due to corporate special interest money, but the ballot initiative is the way to put the power in the hands of the people. Andre's going to share that with us.
Yeah, Andre, you ready? House,
welcome to Generational Change.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's absolutely nice to meet you. We've never met. We've spoken to a couple of different Whole Washington people. We've been following this for a long time now. I wish that you and New York and California really took this contest to heart. And like, I look at it like it's a good race right now. Like, and so we're hedging our bets and supporting all. But yeah, so welcome. That's what we're going to obviously talk about, healthcare. So Peter.
So obviously there's a lot of people who are sort of down in the dumps right now. It obviously wasn't enough of a body blow for what happened in California. Now, of course, the world is going to be distracted with what's going on in Ukraine. But we cannot forget that we are the only developed nation on earth that does not have healthcare as a guaranteed right. It is absolutely absurd at this point, considering how much we spend on it and how much universal system would actually save us just from the bureaucracy alone. So if you could tell us what the status is right now. Obviously, I know that for the past couple of years, you guys have been attempting to get the attention of, you know, Representative Pramila Jayapal, for example. It doesn't seem like the federally elected representatives in Washington have any interest in paying any mind to this. So if that's the case, you can't just sit on your hands, and you guys are planning to do it, it appears, the next best thing, which is let's get a ballot initiative going, and then there's really no way that they can ignore us. So tell us about, you know, what the status is as far as that goes, as well as the status of the organization.
Yeah, there's a lot there to work with. The first thing on, you know, the distraction from, you know, what's going on in Ukraine. I always, you know, remind people that, you know, finding out what you're against is kind of the first step. And we are against imperialism in all forms and for all sorts of reasons. But I think where kind of activism comes into its own is when you figure out what it is that you're for. And so that's why it's really important that we're not just always showing up for the things that we're against, but we're presenting the alternative. Instead of doing this, we could be investing our resources into providing everybody healthcare. So I think that's super important. Then you mentioned New York and California, and I wanted to say that it is a race that we're happy to be in. You know, I would love to see any of these states become the first one to implement some sort of universal public healthcare system in the United States. But it's also something that I think is time for us to start discussing in a more collaborative way than just a friendly race. There is an incredible amount of support that these campaigns can give one another. And there are actually things that you can achieve when you work across state lines that you can't do if you just work within your own state. And I'm actually really excited to say that, I'm in the early days of forming a group, but we've been meeting since October and really working together on this. And it's grown a lot, especially since the CalCare, what happened with CalCare, because we threw together like an emergency solidarity meeting for CalCare. and over 80 activists from all over the country joined. And we've been working under the name Medicare for All Everywhere. And you can look that up on Twitter. But we are explicitly working towards building formal coalition between the statewide campaigns and the organizations that are pushing them. And we really think that that is something that we haven't seen yet and something that will move this forward. You know, we are all down in the dumps about CalCare, but the thing that I have to remind people so often is that if you're not prepared for some setbacks and some losses, you know, the fight to defeat Big Pharma and to implement free universal healthcare in the United States, it might be a tough one to be in, because what we are fundamentally proposing is that we are going to win where we've only seen, you know, many, many attempts and nobody has succeeded at this before. And we have to be grateful for everyone who, you know, got us this far, and, you know, the people who taught me about how our healthcare system works and how it could be better, right? That's all work that came before. And we have to just keep building on the efforts and the, you know, the many noble efforts that have come before us. So that's all a lot of context. You know, when it comes to where we are in Washington, I also always remind people that we do not exclusively focus on the ballot initiative. We always try to pass this through the legislature. There's also a Universal Healthcare Commission in Washington. And even though they're on a timeline that puts them, you know, at a kind of slower rate than what we're talking about, we also hope that, you know, they move us towards a single payer healthcare system in Washington. So where that commission is concerned, we always want to remind everyone involved, single payer is where we want this to go. That is, you know, we already know that this is the right answer. When it comes to the ballot initiative, we are on track to file in mid-March, which is when that is due. It usually takes about a month to finalize the language that goes on the petition to get a number. So we've put our launch date for about 1 month after filing. So for now, it's April 15th. So, you know, we've got some stuff to do before that. First of all, any potential changes that we might want to make to the legislation, we have an opportunity now to talk to our community and policy experts and make any improvements to the bill that anyone can think of. And then we need to raise money in order to have the resources just to print those petitions and supply the bins and supply our volunteers. And that's a unexpectedly high expense, because not everyone knows this, but in Washington state, you actually have to include the entire text of the bill on every sheet that anyone signs. And it's a kind of ridiculous requirement. Nobody can read it. The text is tiny. We're just checking off a box. But what it means is, you know, we have to raise a lot of money for, you know, professional printing on giant sheets and many pages. So that's one of the main things that we are working on between now and when we launch in April. And then other than that, it's really just recruitment, 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 exposure, 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 which is why we're so happy to have the invitation to speak here today. But, you know, a lot of this infrastructure, we want to be as prepared as we can be, but we also recognize that, like, once we actually start gathering signatures is really when, you know, all of the wheels of the organization start to turn kind of together towards a common goal. And so that's what's going to really help us, you know, not just be prepared, but then to continue to grow and build off of the infrastructure that we lay down, and really, really get out there in front of the public. Because everyone who signs your petition is a potential volunteer. And so we really think that that's when, you know, we're going to see a lot more growth.
I think it's awesome. And I think, I just think it's important that, you know, when you live in a state that does have ballot initiatives, we talked about this very recently, like it didn't, you know, I didn't realize New York didn't have this, but when you do have that opportunity, it's important to be doing that as well as trying to do it from within your legislature. But in Florida, that's just not going to happen. So what does your state legislature look like in terms of this ever being something that could come through there?
Well, you know, it is difficult to say. What I would say is that right now there's not a ton of indication that our legislature would take action on this soon. You know, we can say, let's just take this year, right? Basically our bill has been, you know, not given a hearing for the second year in a row. I think they also basically didn't advance our bill past committee, our previous version of our bill. So it's actually been 3 or more years in which, you know, not only have they not voted on it, but they haven't given it a hearing. They basically were very straightforward with us this year. You know, it's not getting a hearing this year. And they told us that at the beginning of the session. It's a short session. So, you know, I always say that the legislature can basically pass any bill they want at any time. And we would hope that that's something that we could, you know, create a moment that causes that to happen. But we also don't believe in sort of waiting on that, right? Because we are legislators as well as citizens. And so we basically, the relationship that we have with the legislature really is that, you know, we would love for you to pass this. We would love to get our weekends back and not have to go out and collect 400,000 signatures. But if that's not something that you're doing, you know, this year, then we are going to run a ballot initiative. The commission that has been set up is intended to work with the legislature. And I can't call the timelines, you know, perfectly to mind right now, but basically they give them a few years of study and then another few years of implementation with relatively non-specific commitments on what the healthcare system that comes out of that should look like. Mostly it says, you know, it ought to be universal. It ought to be, you know, funded by public money. You know, the people who work on this commission, there are single payer advocates on it, and they believe that they will be able to bring together a coalition within the legislature to do it. Which is why we believe in, you know, that we still believe in the legislature and even the commission. We just think that the main thing that's going to propel that into happening would be a huge amount of public support. And that's what you get to build when you run a ballot initiative. So even if we don't get on the ballot, or let's say we do get on the ballot, but we don't win the election, that's still thousands and thousands of people that we got in front of and talked about into this issue and hopefully mobilize into universal healthcare advocates to then have these conversations with their legislators and other members of their community. So growth is always sort of, you always have to, you know, not focus on what it is that you didn't achieve or what you lost, but what it is that you got, which is you got to talk to many people about this and build, you know, do public education and organization.
Yeah,
we always say Stackhouse, that. Who's founder of Whole, who is the campaign director of Whole Washington. I think it's very important that people also do have that perspective. You know, we're a 230-year-old nation at this point, and, you know, we don't have healthcare and we never have had it. And so even when we got Medicare, it was very limited in terms of its scope over the age of 65, and there were significant limitations, especially regarding vision, hearing, and dental. So there are so many gaps that are still there. And I know a lot of people have been, Jen and I talk about this a lot, there is a very big nihilistic movement that has been brewing on the left for quite some time now. And I know a lot of them do not see electing non-corporate representatives as the answer. We don't believe it's the sole answer. We believe it's one of the answers. I believe that organizations like yours are also another part of the equation if we're going to achieve these major legislative victories. Aside from the fact that the president of the United States has executive authority, that he could do a lot of this stuff and chooses not to do it.
We could have Medicare right now, people. We could all have Medicare. He could have declared an emergency with COVID and expanded Medicare to cover everybody. We could all have Medicare.
Hell, he could just give Medicare right now for places that legitimately are living in a medical emergency every day of their lives, like Flint, Michigan. You know, there is the clause within the Social Security Act that was updated through the ACA that's able to do that. So how do you see it, Andre? Like, obviously, I'm sure you're very familiar with a lot of that nihilistic talk that's been going on. The hell with this, the hell with that, can't do anything, can't achieve anything. Even though things are pretty dire, I think we've come quite a ways in the last 5 years. How do you see it? And more or less, how do you see sort of the strategy, if you will, going forward to achieve these objectives?
Well, one thing that I always say is that don't use anything less than all of your power. And if somebody tells you that, you know, the ballot initiative is not power that you have, I would challenge that. If somebody says your ability to vote or withhold your vote is not a power, you know, then I would challenge that, because we had to fight for most of our power as you know, citizens and people within this society, right? These aren't just given, right? So you have to fight for them, and then you have to fight to expand them, right? So when you look at the expansion of voting rights, right, it was very limited. And you could say, well, this is clearly an unfair system, right? And it is. And it we've never achieved sort of the vision set down in kind of our founding documents, right? So we're still working towards it. But the only way we ever get there is by using the power that we do have, and not, you know, fixating on the power that we don't have. And so that's one message that I always bring to people. I can't remember, there was some other part to that question that I wanted to respond to, but, you know, just in terms of, maintaining, I guess, I just think it's really important to maintain a positive attitude, as much as possible, and let our disappointments sort of fuel our action, right? But not fuel us into inaction.
That's a very well stated point.
I always say it's a snowball, and every part of it is important, even if it's just one layer. Like, it just, and we talk about that regarding, you know, congressional campaigns, any kind of campaign. If you use that campaign as a platform to further the message that we're trying to make, then win or lose, it's a win, because you've already engaged more people than were aware in the first place. So I think it's all very important. And I think that people get very fixated on what their thing is, their contribution, and then spend most of their time criticizing other people's contributions instead of sort of realizing it's all important. That's what I think happens, especially on the left. Sorry
to
say.
I think it's really common to see things as contradictory that aren't, right? So if I believe in electoralism, then I couldn't possibly believe in general strikes. And I think that that's just ridiculous, right? These things work together. And that's, you know, I often try to use the language of mass movements, right? Because there's not like one strategy, and there's not one person in charge calling the shots, right? It's more chaotic than that. But when those energies get connected, that's when you start to see not just one concession, but the many things, like the snowball that you talk about, form, right? When we think of like the civil rights era, right? It's not just like one wrong that was righted by one movement and one piece of legislation that got passed, right? And then the civil rights movement was over, right? It's still happening. There are many injustices, right? And there are many strategies and leaders and moments. And building that collective energy, right, means supporting many different kinds of work and many different strategies that are happening. And the thing that I forgot to mention earlier is just like, I do often use Bernie. You know, I was very politically minded, but not politically active before Bernie. And one of the things that always struck me about that campaign was just how much it accomplished in two unsuccessful campaigns. And if you want to go, you know, back to people like, you know, Debs or, you know, Eugene Debs or Ralph Nader or whoever, right? Yes, these are all people who lost, right? We often remember these people for their losses, but the effect that they had on society is bigger than the fact that they didn't become president or didn't win some race that they won. They bring with them a movement of people that becomes the new wave of the movement.
That's well stated. And I think, you know, right now, and Roger Meadows, thank you as always for the support. The more people you come in contact with, even seeing something like universal healthcare on the ballot is going to get people thinking about it and talking about it. And having the ability to, like you said, cross network with people all over the country every day is a new opportunity for people to see exactly what a universal healthcare system would be all about. And as we always like to say, the easiest way to explain what it would be is removing the for-profit middlemen in between us and our doctors. One thing we have seen over the course of the last year plus is a very strong movement, mostly on the right, but a lot of people in general who were very skeptical of taking the vaccine. One of the reasons why they were skeptical without question is the power of big pharma. You turn on TV, MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, it doesn't matter. You'll see an advertisement for Pfizer, Moderna, Aetna, Cigna, United Healthcare, it doesn't matter. It's a for-profit system. We remember what happened when Oprah interviewed Meghan and Harry. Of course, everybody in the UK went absolutely bananas seeing all the advertisements that we do for big pharma and private insurance. So I'm curious, over this time, and the thing that's unique about Washington State is that it's a very democratic state, particularly in the coastline portion of the state, in the Puget Sound, Upper West portion of the state in particular. But there is also a very rural part of the state that's also very red. What has been your experience with some of the more conservative people communicating with them? And we believe that if we had a universal healthcare system in the United States, there would have been a hell of a lot less skepticism about taking the vaccine. What's been that experience like over the past year plus?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll first confess to having not been heavily involved in the first signature gathering drive that whole Washington ran. But my understanding is that in that run in particular, it was sort of like running off of the Bernie Sanders 2016 campaign, you know, some of the energy from that, you know, Medicare for All becoming this sort of under the radar, like new issue for a lot of people. And Bernie, you know, quite, you know, notoriously did well among self-identified conservatives, right? And you had a sort of similar energy with whole Washington. This is what I've been told, right? So that there was a lot of openness to it. Now, what I've heard is that since then, when it became more of a Democratic Party issue, Medicare for All became this slogan that, you know, most of the Democratic primary candidates ran on in 2020, even if they weren't necessarily running on the Bernie Sanders Medicare for All plan. And so it's become a little bit more associated with the Democratic Party. And so what you've seen there is sort of an increase in anti-partisanship from the more conservative parts of Washington. And, you know, I'll add, you know, I think that Washington State in that way does provide a sort of interesting microcosm of the country in that it has such a strong split. You know, it's like this east-west split, rural-urban split. But so occasionally when I'm speaking to a more conservative person, I will get hit with very, very common sort of anti-partisan points about this, right? Government, taxes, you know, losing choice, this sort of thing. Private markets are good. But what I've found is that not nearly as many people as you expect have actually even engaged with this issue, especially among conservatives. And so most of the time when I'm talking to someone who is more conservative minded, they have not spent a ton of time thinking about this issue. And when you talk to them like a human being, and you don't talk in terms of the really common talking points that we hear on the issue, in terms of, oh, you know, this reduces administrative waste, right? Or this, you know, removes networks or whatever. I tend to focus more on the experience of using it, right? I say, imagine that you walked in, you got the healthcare, and when you walked out, nobody handed you a bill, right? And you're not getting a surprise one in the mail in a couple of weeks either, right? Imagine paying less money every month, right? Imagine no more paperwork, not being kept on hold with your insurance company just to be told that, yeah, you do have to pay for that, right? When you kind of speak to people's actual experiences with the healthcare system, rather than the contours of this fight that have been outlined by sort of the political parties or, you know, all of these narratives out there, if you get off the script a little bit, people are very responsive to it. And I don't see this as necessarily a highly partisan issue when you're allowed to have that conversation in a really real way.
We have found that this country is hyper partisan divided in a very unhealthy and dangerous way in many respects. We also see that a lot of people in, you know, let's say on social media, on, you know, podcasts on YouTube, they benefit highly from the divide and conquer strategy, constantly dunking on the other side. The way I see it, you know, we're never going to get anywhere if we don't recognize that we have a hell of a lot more in common than we don't. I always say that progressives and libertarians really do have a lot in common. They obviously have strong economic philosophy differences for sure, but there are definite common ground points that can be made. And one of the most common ground points that can be made about universal health care is that despite the propaganda that's out there, it is a massive cost saver. It is the most efficient economic way to run a healthcare system. And either you have healthcare or you don't have a society. So you can, you know, you can claim whatever you want. Reality is we need to move in that direction. And I think we are moving in that direction. So as we wind down the conversation, what are the current things that you guys are working on? How could we help you? And, you know, we obviously believe that as much as electoral politics is important, I think helping build organizations like yours are just as important, if not more so, because it is going to take an inside-outside strategy to accomplish the goals that we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, and I don't know if it would be taking too much of your time, so please feel absolutely free to say no. We do have a 10-minute campaign video that I think would be great to show. The main thing that I would ask of anyone, you know, who is hoping to get involved is, like, if you go to wholewashington.org/volunteer and sign up, and don't think of it as, I just want to get involved in this campaign so we pass it this year. I really ask everyone to think about it more in terms of, like, I want to build this movement. I want to contribute to this movement that needs to happen, that might start here in Washington, but is, you know, a movement for this country to have free universal healthcare. You know, kind of what you were saying, what's powerful is making it simple. And if we can make it simple for people, I think that we can win. They will come along with us regardless of kind of where they sit on the political aisle. And ultimately, the truth that we have going for us, right, is that this fundamentally is, you know, citizens fighting for their own healthcare and the healthcare of their community versus the powerful political interests that don't want it. Big pharma, private health insurance. These are not popular guys, you know? And so people can be confused about, you know, how this actually stacks up as a fight, but it is as simple as that. And we can win. We can win, I think, if we're able to help people see, you know, exactly what the sides of this fight look like.
I remember constantly when we were campaigning that most people agree on these issues. The problem that we have is the tribalism and the partisanism and people sort of just saying whatever talking point they heard from whatever their news source is. But if when you really explain to people what this is about, for the most part, people agree with this. This is not radical. It's not really left. I mean, it's really anywhere else in the world. This is just center. But I think that that's the common ground. And I think a huge source to get there, and we touched on it briefly, is labor. And that's one of the biggest connectors that we find between left and right when you're talking about economic justice and workers' rights. You'll see people from all different political backgrounds that come together on that. And I see healthcare as something that is also very important to that community as well. So there's definitely like this nexus between healthcare and labor that I think would make our snowball even bigger. Yeah.
Well,
Jen, if you can check the private chat.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, how do I do it? Okay. How do I do this?
Come on, you're not that technologically or illiterate.
I am. I've got issues, guys.
Washington State is home to over 7.6 million people. If it was a country,
hold on.
Nations like Australia.
I got to pause it. Norway. I got to go back.
But what?
I'm sorry. I am. Look, you know what? You're not here and I can't, you know, do. Is it a video file or is just a share screen? And I have to stop this.
Yes, it is a share screen. You can play the YouTube link like we normally would.
I'm going to do it. I've got it. Here we go. All right, guys.
Pull us out.
Washington State is home to over 7.6 million people. If it was a country, its GDP per capita would be higher than wealthy nations like Australia, Germany, and Norway. But while all of these countries have free universal healthcare systems, 6.6% of Washington State, or over 450,000 people, have no health insurance at all. What can we do to ensure that everyone has comprehensive health care no matter what? Or what can we do to provide health care that's always there? The answer is universal public health insurance. Senate Bill 5204 would create a universal public health insurance plan called the Whole Washington Health Trust. That plan would cover all Washington residents. That's right, everyone, regardless of age, income, or employment status, everyone's covered. It also covers everything. In fact, it's a huge expansion beyond traditional Medicare because it includes dental, vision, hearing, mental health, reproductive health, and much more. For a full list, go to Whole Washington's website. And it also costs between $5 and $10 billion less than our current healthcare system every year. And remember, that's without leaving anyone uninsured or in medical debt. So how do we pass it? Well, in Washington State, we have ballot initiatives. Ballot initiatives are a process in which citizens can collect a required number of signatures to put a law on the ballot to be either approved or rejected by a direct vote of the people. This is the process we use to legalize cannabis and marriage equality. So the question is, what about universal health care? According to the Washington State Constitution, the number of signatures we need to collect is 8% or more of the votes cast for governor in the last election. How many is that? Well, just under 2.5 million people voted for governor in 2020. 8% of that is just under 325,000. However, the Secretary of State recommends an additional 15 to 20% cushion to account for invalid signatures. For instance, maybe someone who isn't a registered voter or who isn't from Washington State signed our petition. So, an additional 23% cushion gives us a goal of 400,000 total signatures to put universal public health insurance on the ballot. One thing you might notice about this is that it's actually fewer than the number of people who are uninsured. So, how are we going to collect the signatures? That's where the whole Washington signature captain is coming. The idea is very simple. We recruit 800 captains, and we have them each commit to leading the collection of 500 signatures. What do we mean by leading? Well, the signature captains don't necessarily need to personally collect every signature. It's just on them to make sure that it happens. This is a leadership position, which means you will have support if you need it. Why 800 captains? Well, it's a big number, but it's doable. We know that there are thousands of supporters of Medicare for All and universal health care in Washington State. So the question is, can we turn 800 of them into signature captains? It's likely more captains than we would actually need to get the signatures, but we consider that a good thing because it forces us to focus on recruitment. Remember, we don't just need to get this on the ballot, we need to win the election. So it's important that we bring in as many people as we can. Why 500 signatures each? Well, it's totally achievable by a single person. Anyone can do it, but it's a large enough number that it naturally encourages the formation of teams, which is something we really want to encourage captains to do to make these goals so much more achievable. But even without a full team, this can be done in just 10 to 15 hours. So we really want to emphasize that you can do this. You can do this. And one way we're going to help captains succeed at collecting their 500 signatures is by making sure they have support from other captains through a buddy system. So as part of your onboarding, you're going to be paired with a big buddy and you're going to be paired with a little buddy. And just like that, every signature captain will have a support system of two other people in the program that they can go to anytime they need help. Leading up to signature gathering, we're going to be very focused on recruiting volunteers and assigning them to captains to form small teams. Depending on the availability of volunteers and the needs of each captain, those teams may look quite different. Some captains might not need a team at all. Our goal is for every captain to have a team that they feel will make them successful. Now, sometime before signature gathering begins, each captain will be receiving a box containing everything they need to get their signatures. We're calling it the Signature Captain Field Kit because we imagine that you could simply hand the box to a volunteer and it would provide clear step-by-step instructions for completing the Signature Captain Commitment. Inside that box will be at least 25 petition sheets and 5 boards for you and your team, as well as the Signature Captain Field Guide that contains all sorts of practical information like how to organize a ship, how to recruit volunteers to your team, how to do the data entry, how to send the petition sheets. And of course, every box will contain a hand-knitted red beret as a gift and a symbol of solidarity donated by a volunteer craftivist in support of universal healthcare. So with a team, a box of sheets, a field guide for how to gather signatures, and a red beret to look great doing it, every signature captain will be well prepared to get universal healthcare out in front of voters and on the ballot. The filing deadline for our ballot initiative is in March, and signature gathering will begin shortly after in April. The campaign is nearly 9 months long, and signed petition sheets must be postmarked in late December. Everything before signature gathering begins, we're calling the pre-campaign, and our main goals will be to recruit and train 800 signature captains, plan shifts and signature gathering events, and build pre-awareness of the upcoming initiative campaign. Once signature gathering begins, you'll have a lot of time to reach your commitment. Using all the time available, that comes out to just 15 signatures a week, probably less than an hour of work per week. Once we get the sheets in, the real campaign begins. Election day will be November 2023. So, you're all on board with the plan and you want to know, how do I become a signature captain? Well, the first thing to know is that anyone can do it. You don't need to be 18. You don't need to be a registered voter. You don't even need to be from Washington State. If you're willing and able to make the commitment we need, then you can be a signature captain. Step one, you fill out the signature captain interest form and someone from whole Washington will be in touch with you soon. There's a link at the end of the video and in the description. The next step is to attend a signature captain orientation to learn about the ballot initiative and the signature captain program. Once you understand the program and are willing to make a core commitment, you're ready to sign the signature captain contract. The core commitment is leading the collection of the 500 signatures, working with a small team of volunteers and participating in the buddy system, ensuring the data entry for those signatures, which is critical for keeping us on track with our goals and finding new volunteers, and last, ensuring that the petition sheets get sent into whole Washington, where they'll eventually be sent off to the Secretary of State. So if you understand the commitment and are ready to make it, then you're ready to sign the contract, and congratulations, you're officially a whole Washington signature captain. And that's really all there is to it. That's how 800 well-organized signature captains and a bit of planning can put universal healthcare on the ballot, can win healthcare that's always there and can make Washington whole. So thanks for watching. If you'd like to learn more or get involved, you can fill out the Signature Captain interest form and someone from Whole Washington will be in touch with you soon. You can also keep track of the campaign by following Whole Washington on Twitter at Whole Washington. And if you're watching this as part of orientation, thank you so much for stepping up. We're very excited.
That was great.
Bravo.
Much for showing it.
No, that's awesome. You guys are so organized. Like, it's really refreshing to see that. I mean, it's really great. And I think that it's clear that you're capable of doing this. Like, I don't know. I think, Peter, we might have to get behind Washington and take our money off of New York. I don't know. It's like watching a horse race.
Well, you know, New York, I don't think New York has, does New York have ballot initiatives?
They don't have ballot initiatives, but they have, a legislature that's seemingly a lot more, interested in this. So they,
yeah,
they
listen, have that. When we say it all the time, you know, whatever your opinion is of Ocasio-Cortez, if there is one thing that cannot be denied is that Alex's victory really changed the dynamic of politics in New York. There are so many more progressives, especially non-corporate progressives, even socialists, that have been not only running but winning. And when that happens, you know, one of the reasons why FDR had so much success as a president is because he was really pushed very hard by the socialist and even communist parties in the United States at the time. And so if New York continues to elect, you know, socialist candidates, non-corporate candidates, it's going to move the Overton window very far to the left. And so ultimately getting to that point where the New York Health Act can be passed, you know, that is obviously a great thing. But without a ballot initiative, that obviously limits them to that one path. Other states like Washington, like California, can have a ballot initiative. And it looks like Whole Washington, which I believe you guys are going into your third or fourth year now, you guys have really been doing a great job. And this is an organization that has a lot of great people involved with it already. Where are you guys in terms of your signature captains? And what can people do to help as we wind down this conversation?
We're going to go to the place. I keep posting it.
No, I know that, but I'm asking.
Okay.
So we're at about 80 signature captains. We have many more volunteers than that. So part of what we're doing is trying to move our volunteers who haven't quite made that commitment up into being a signature captain. So we have almost, 1,000 supporters on Facebook, about 500 in our Slack. We have a mailing list of a few thousand people. We have the pool of people to fill those numbers out. It's just a matter of really getting in touch with them and engaging them. It's been a lot of infrastructure to build in a short amount of time, but I can say that, I was frantically attending every meeting and trying to be like, okay, we have a fundraising team that meets every week. And every week I have more people who I can delegate things to, who will, kind of keep that part of the program mm-hmm. running while I go and work on something else. And so more and more, this ship is kind of running itself and building some real momentum. So I think that you're going to see a lot of, we expect the growth curve to be always increasing with this campaign.
As well it should. Guys, show love to Whole Washington and sign up to be a signature captain. And so I heard in the video, anybody can do this, but you actually have to get physical signatures. So what are the requirements in terms of what people can do who aren't actually there versus people that you have that if you're in Washington people and you could actually canvass, I know that they could use the help. So,
yeah. So, one of the best things about working on a campaign like this, right, is like, not only do we not have to just work with legislators, we don't even have to keep our work to people in Washington state or people who are, say, citizens, because it's true that you have to be a citizen to sign the ballot initiative, but you don't have to be a citizen to collect signatures. So when it comes to out-of-state people, we want to help organize some trips into Washington state to help us gather the signatures. But even if you can't set foot in Washington, we have a great need for phone bankers. We have a great need for data entry. And you can even be a signature captain if you can't come to Washington State, because what we could do is we can give you some people on the ground. We can give you a zip code to look at or something like that, right? And say, okay, you plan the shifts, you follow up with your volunteers, you make sure that the 500 signatures happen, but you don't have to come here. So, you know, we really think that in order to get the numbers that we want, we just can't turn away anybody. And that includes people out of state.
Yeah, guys, this is really important, especially for us in Florida.
How about people out of the country? You could get people from Canada that actually have the universal health care and can really convey that message, you know, to a lot of people, especially people in Vancouver. You know, tell them, hey, look, you know, we're doing this. This could really be very helpful, especially if you can equate what it's like to have, you know, a universal system and the benefits that you guys see that we don't see. And I think explaining that to American voters, I think, could go a long way. I don't know if you guys have done that, but I know that especially if I was in Seattle, that's definitely something I'd be doing.
Well, we definitely have a lot of volunteers who will tell us that they're from Canada. And that's a huge part of what mobilized them into the fight. But I do want to tell just a quick story, which is, you know, we often talk about how Saskatchewan was the first province in Canada to pass this and how we want to be Saskatchewan of the United States or whatever. But, you know, when you have that international mindset, that story involves 90% of the doctors in Saskatchewan going on strike after that law passed. And part of the way that that succeeded was that the government was able to work with a lot of European doctors, including many from the UK. You know, so I just think that, like, in terms of the number of ways you can show up and support, you might not even, you know, I sometimes hesitate to tell that story because it's one that makes it sound like, you know, holy crap, you know, the fight ahead might get really, really intense.
Oh, it will.
And we know it will. We absolutely know it will. But, you know, the fact that there were doctors, right? Europe, like, doctors from public healthcare systems who saw what that was and said, we can't just let this happen. We have to go in. You know, that kind of international solidarity, the more of that we can develop, the better. Because, you know, in the end, we all are connected and sharing this world together. And, you know, universal healthcare, expansion of healthcare to cover more and more people, it benefits everyone. It really does, even if there's someone very far away in another part of the world.
Couldn't have said it better. Andre Stackhouse, the political campaign director of Whole Washington, an organization that we wholeheartedly support, no pun intended, and definitely want to see bigger and better things. We were very happy to have you on this evening, Andre. Keep doing what you're doing, and we're going to do everything we can to help push this forward. Universal healthcare is coming, guys. Just got to keep staying in the fight.
Yeah. Thanks, Andre.
Thank you, everybody.
Have a good one. So needless to say, so
you have this like blue thing that's been on your face the whole time. And I don't know.
Yeah, if it's I know. I don't know what the hell it is. I've been trying to figure it out, but I think
By the way, nice shirt. I know. Well,
yeah. Well, of course, ESP, right? ESPN.
We've just been working together a long time at this point. We've been off a couple of times.
Not as many as we've been on. So there you go.
So talk cool. about being patrons to the people. Tell people to be patrons.
Well, if you guys like what we're doing, obviously, as you know, we do not take a salary and probably never will. So the money that we bring in goes to organizations like Whole Washington. So if you like what we're doing, please go to patreon.com/.
Put it in the comments, Peter. Why don't you put it in the comments? You can't comment?
I am not able to comment.
This is really frustrating considering I asked you to do it the other way. All right. What's it? Patreon? I never know it. It's patreon.com/generational change.
Pretty easy.
Right. Be patrons.
It's for really almost $5 a month, you can become involved with our organization. If you believe that good things are possible. I believe in good things, and I don't
We believe in good things.
Yeah, just like Kyle says. Yeah, I don't like good things, and I dislike bad things.
But so, in all seriousness, the kind of stuff that we do, guys, like where the money goes, is to things that are here local. Yes, like community things that are local, but it does go to support organizations and candidates that are non-corporate and that are in line with our mission. And yeah, I think we are going to start a PAC. I do, because this really has me thinking, like, this is the way it works, and whether we like it or not. And so we have to sort of be able to, you know, this is, we can't keep showing up to the gunfights with a fork. Like, I feel like that's what we're doing. And so, yeah, so we're going to have a generational change pack, guys, and I'll be trying to get, you know, money that's bigger than what most people can get, because in Florida, if you're going to let us have the Wild West of campaigning, let's be a part of that. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There is.
Look at this. Look what Roger's saying. Jen, unions are fighting against the New York Health Act. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins pulled a Cuomo and said, let the federal government do it.
Roger, wow. You know, we have to be very specific about which unions they are. And obviously the problem with unions is that it's the union bosses and the union delegates that are predominantly the ones fighting against it. Union rank and file are obviously a different story. But any information that you can share is obviously very important. And you know,
everybody we've spoken to, like union people we've spoken to, are very incredibly supportive of single payer healthcare.
And what's even more,
they're tired of negotiating.
Well, when you hear the argument that come from union people about, you know, we negotiated our union contract and we worked really hard to have this, that, and the other, I'm like thinking, yeah, you negotiated to pay a lot more for healthcare than you would otherwise need to. If you do not have to worry about paying for healthcare through your union, what do you think that means for you, union representative? It means that your contract is less and you can negotiate for higher wages. How about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's like every other organization. The people at the top at some point tend to lose, you know, that they're working on behalf of the other people. So it just becomes no different than a corporation. So that's the problem, is that like we'll always side with labor, but that's not necessarily going to always be in alignment with the union. And those are not the same thing. I think that people have to understand that. So, you know, this, I don't know which unions you're talking about in this case.
Yeah, that is something we need to know. And so with that said, anytime, you know, you're dealing with somebody or an organization, you know, that ultimately says, yeah, we can't do this. You know, we worked really hard to get here. Look, there's no greater challenge in our country right now than to make sure that we have a universal healthcare system. And so that is one of the biggest things that we are fighting for on the home front right now. Obviously, internationally, it's another story. But in terms of domestic policy, the most immediate policy that could be enacted that would change tens of millions of lives overnight, would be the universal healthcare system.
Yeah.
And the reason they fight so hard against it is because so many people benefit immensely financially from it.
And well, so people not in power, not that many people, really. I mean, not overall. Like, most people do not benefit from
it. But the people who are at the top, like Celia Richards, is that her name, or Cecily Richards? The one who's the head of Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
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 They're not in favor of universal health care. And why would they be? Because if we had universal health care, Planned Parenthood wouldn't need to exist.
Well, it would depend. If our universal health care had like draconian rules that our universal health care won't cover females' reproductive rights.
That's and to be fair, with the conservative right, that may be the grand bargain. That might be it.
We're not negotiating with terrorists. And I feel like, you know, that's a big issue. Because if you don't include things like female reproductive health as part of healthcare, then that's off the table to me. Like, then we're not making a deal. Like, that's ridiculous.
That's just not non-negotiable. There will be people on the conservative right who will be open to a universal system, but they'll draw the line on that issue. That's what.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I do still believe that there is this idea of majority rule, and most people far and wide support a woman's right to choose in this country. It's not even close. Not even close. Far big majority support a woman's right to choose. So this is the thing. And we, when we recognize that, we have to realize, why do we have to be held captive by a small minority of people?
Because most people may agree with the policy, but they're not willing to get involved and actually do something about it.
Well, I think that changes when you start looking at things like what's happening in Florida with the 15-week abortion ban and what's going on in Texas, and more people. All this is going to serve to do is increase our already ridiculously high infant and maternal mortality rate in this country. We have the highest infant and maternal mortality rate in the developed world. We do. And when you start criminalizing abortion, all you're going to do is increase that number. It's really, it's very basic. This is not complicated. And, you know, I don't think people really understand that. They think you're going to ban it so people will stop doing it. Well, that's not going to happen. Banning things doesn't work. It doesn't work with assault weapons. It doesn't work with abortion. It didn't work with alcohol. It doesn't work. And
I want you to look up, the gentleman's name is Dennis Baxley, Baxley. He is the state senator for District 12.
Yeah.
If you want to see what the face of the 15-week abortion...
you want me to put it up on the screen?
Sure.
Okay, hold on a second.
I want people to see this guy.
Okay.
If you guys want to see what a real good old boy state senator looks like in Florida, again, you have every right not to like DeSantis, but if you want to know where this comes from, where this archaic, backwards thinking, small majority runs the show because they figured out a way to basically game the system, this is the guy.
This guy.
Mm-hmm. That's him.
Yeah, he looks like he should be making decisions about my uterus. That seems reasonable. Yeah, I would. He looks like somebody who should be in charge of that.
He is a guy who thinks he should be in charge of your uterus, because that's how 1 minute, 3-inch men, if you catch my drift, think like, because that's what they are. And they have so many of these men have massive Napoleon complexes.
Well, or I also think that they're closeted individuals in a lot of cases.
They're also yes, absolutely. There's also that problem as well. And when friend of the show, Anna Eskamani, was making the speech on the Florida House floor the other day, of course, this is this bill crosses in the House and the Senate, of course.
Yeah.
And so Anna was speaking and talking about why this is such a bad bill. And all you have to do is look at the face that Mr. Baxley was making in her direction, sitting right next to her. It shows you the complete and utter disdain that when you talk about old white men, because we have a very big problem in this country, specifically with people on the left, liberal left, progressive left, where they say, oh, you bunch of old white men. Let me tell you something. It's not that way, but there are old white men like this guy that pull the levers of power. And when they pull them in the most selfish, backwards, asinine, archaic, useless governance you will ever see. If you want to see what the Dixie South really looks like in terms of governance, Senator Baxley is the embodiment of the problem.
And by the way, while we're speaking of this issue, anybody, if you weren't here in the beginning, if you know anybody who lives in Indian River County, and honestly, at this point, it could be anybody. I'm telling you, I would take out a Craigslist ad for this. We need somebody who will run for the new state Senate seat in Indian River County. I believe it's the Vero Beach area. And I, you know what, I got to pull up the number of that and I'll have it for next time, but we need somebody to run because the woman who is going to be ushered into that seat is none other than Erin Grawl, who is the representative.
Could you say this is again?
What?
Which district did you say this is again?
That's what I'm going to look up. Will you do it while you're sitting there? It's the new Senate seat in Indian River County, because we just redistricted and there's a brand new Senate seat there. And Erin Grawl, who is in the Florida House, she is the woman who sponsored the parental consent for abortion bill. And this is another one of those people that feels the need to control what other people do with their bodies. So I do not want this woman to just walk into a seat just because it's almost like it's going to be given to her. It sounds like a lot of people, including the head of the Florida Senate, are sort of encouraging this and, you know, really supportive of her. I'm sure they are. And then they can get all together in their like evangelical holy roller tents and like, you know, speak in tongues. But you could keep that out of my uterus. So if anybody knows anybody politically active in Indian River County or affiliated with the Indian River Dems, if you know somebody who's an independent but cares about civil liberties, that would be ideal. So somebody needs to run against this woman. That's my little pet project, people. More on that. So, did you look up the seat?
No, I don't see it.
Yeah,
I looked her up. I mean, what are you going to do? The reality is that you got a lot of religious obsessives here in Florida, and you know they've been pulling the levers of power for a long time. And not only that, you know, you have to remember that there's been sort of this great awakening for a lot of people, and so when they have the opportunity to see politics up close and personal, especially here in Florida, you know, we've got a really big problem because they are fighting back, but so is the Democratic Party, because they don't want a non-corporate takeover of the infrastructure. That's what they're
desperate. So here's what I just found. She's running in, it's proposed Senate District 29. So I don't know. Well, this is from the beginning of the month, so I'm not sure if it's happened yet for the state districts. Sure. But she chairs the House Judiciary Committee, and this is from the Florida Politics, says, and has been a particularly powerful force on religious conservatism issues. Yeah, thanks, Erin. We appreciate that. That includes her highly contentious abortion restriction bill that is now progressing through the legislature. This woman is a menace. She's a menace. And, you know, when I look at, like, I don't feel the need to share her picture, but like, if people tend to look that up, that's on them. But a picture of her and her three children, they look like her kids look like Stepford children. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not exactly sure how this is going to work, but if it is going to be a new district or just different district lines, because I happen to know the state senator in District 29, Tina Polsky, she's represents Boca Raton and a few different areas up in that area, but that's not where this district is going to be.
See, here's what it says. Here's what it says. Nearby incumbents who may have had a portion of the electorate now defined into Senate District 29 fall into other Senate districts. Democratic Senator Tina Polsky moves into Senate District 30. So, okay. Yeah, so it's getting shifted around, but this is going to be a new open seat. So anybody pay attention, Senate District 29, that is going to be a new redrawn district. Just saying. Because that woman's a menace.
It sure seems that way.
So, yeah, guys, what's coming up on Wednesday?
Well, guys, on Wednesday, we are going to have a very conservative voice, but one that I've wanted to have on, particularly because of what's been going on in the Ukraine. Colonel Rob Manis, many of you may know him. He's a very big conservative voice on social media. He's very Trumpy. We know a lot of his takes are not good. But he is a 32-year veteran of the United States Air Force, and I think it's very important that we do talk to some people that have actually been there that can give a different type of perspective, potentially one that's, and I believe he's very much on the libertarian side, so he's not a war hawk. So I think it'll be important to have that type of perspective in terms of what's going on right now. We also may have a guest. I got confirmation via text, Jen. to come and talk about what's going on with the People's Party. Obviously, we didn't want to get too deep into it tonight because there's still information that needs to come out. Obviously,
I spoke about it before you came on. I spoke about it and I merely said that so far all we know is what we've heard from other people and that we're not going to really speculate and that we would be having somebody on shortly who could speak more firsthand about that. Yes. And that we are not forming an opinion based on what we've heard so far, because that's not proof. That's just people talking. So,
correct.
Yeah. So, but, did you confirm that she can come on Wednesday?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we will be having somebody to come on and give a chat that was on the inside as a volunteer for the People's Party, for the Movement for a People's Party. And we'll get first hand knowledge of some of the stuff going on.
That'll be fun.
Is that it? Do we have anything else interesting going on?
I think that's it for now. I'll be in the studio on Wednesday.
Do you like the idea of we should have a generational change pack? We really should. Anytime somebody wants to donate, like that wants to donate money and support what we're trying to do, why not? Why should we not be playing in the same sandbox with these people?
Well, I would say as long as we're not taking corporate special interest money, we can absolutely have a pack. And then it's a determining factor as to people having a voice in terms of where they think the money should be allocated. You know, we are going to be very transparent about it. I believe that whole Washington would be a great example of an organization that we would like to help support. And I'm sure there are all organizations here in Florida.
Well, that's what I mean. But if we could amass money in a way that a candidate can't, you know, then yeah, let's do that. And if there are other organizations that have money that want to support what we're doing, I'll take their money. I honestly don't have a problem with the idea of getting unlimited money as long as we're completely transparent about where it's coming from, which I would be. And I wouldn't take it from anything that was contrary to what we're working on. So
yeah, and it's not that we're benevolent or anything like that, but I'd like to think that money's in good hands if it's us deciding where it goes.
Well, that's what I feel like. I feel like at least then there is, you know, when we look at our state party, and anybody who's affiliated in Florida, you know this, our state party is sponsored by Big Sugar and Walmart. And so I feel like if that's the Democrats, if they're taking money from those sources, which I find to be very nefarious, and we could somehow raise big money from non-nefarious sources to compete with that, why would we not do that? You know, right. Our own party is corporate. So we can't do it that way.
For sure.
That's my thought. And then we have other things going on this week as well. We have, did you look into what that healthcare thing was that they were talking about?
I haven't
about?
Found anything yet. Okay. You know, we'll see what ultimately ends up happening as far as the event on Thursday. But Jen and I are attending a Northwestern event on Thursday.
Yes.
So
yes, very exciting. I actually even made a donation to their thing. I don't normally donate to those types of things through alumni stuff because I feel like my donation was the years of student loans that I was paying off to go there. So I generally don't, but I did just because it looks like, and it's, by the way, it's smart casual. So you're going to need to not look wrinkled. All right.
Fair enough. I can work on that. All right, gang. Really appreciate your support. Obviously, the conversation will continue. Guy Iverson, great supporter of the show. Bottom line, we're not getting anywhere on Capitol Hill right now. So we've got to try something. And I think passing it through a statewide initiative, I think that that's the best move we have at the moment. That could change, but we have to keep building the movement out.
Also, by the way, you know what else our PAC could do? If we did a generational change PAC, the first thing that we would be doing would be supporting a ranked choice voting ballot initiative.
Sure.
And we can actually, well, when you're a PAC, you can sponsor ballot initiatives like that. Like you can have one and have your whole own thing. Like that's what you can do. Because we talk about doing that as part of a progressive coalition, but somebody really needs to be the official, like sort of sponsor of whatever the initiative is. But yeah. So we're also working on a coalition of sorts.
Well, let's keep it going. Really appreciate you guys as always. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Bye, all. Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.